The Last Axiom, Book 2 of The Last Axiom Series, by Derek Devon. Dr. Derek Devon believed the universe hummed, not in a poetic sense, but a literal one, a symphony of physical laws so perfectly orchestrated they formed the very fabric of existence. Tonight, however, the only sound accompanying the desert wind sighing around the extremely large telescope array was the nervous click-snap of the raven-engraved Zippo lighter in his hand. It was his metronome for restless nights, and this was shaping up to be one of them. For 783 nights, the Elte's colossal dishes, nestled high in Chile's Atacama Desert under a diamond-shard sky, had been pointed at QSOJ0439+1634, his quasar. A relic from the universe's dawn, its light a 12-billion-year-old messenger. His late mentor, Professor Alistair Finch, had secured Devon this observation time, calling their shared obsession with unified field theory 2.0, UFT 2.0, the universe's source code, finally decrypted. It was the theory of everything, elegant and predictive. And, until Devon's shift began 3 hours ago, flawlessly complete. Devon leaned closer to the primary monitor, the Zippo momentarily still. His other hand, ink-stained from the fountain pen he used for private conjectures, a habit inherited from Finch, hovered over the console. The data stream from J0439+1634, usually a river of unwavering predictability, showed a tremor. A ghost. He'd rerun the sequence a dozen times. The quasar's redshift, its cosmic fingerprint, was stable. But within that ancient light, an impossibly brief absorption line had flickered, a spectral shadow where no known interstellar medium should exist. Nanoseconds, then gone. The Zippo clattered from his numb fingers onto the console. "Atmospheric ghost?" he muttered, his voice a dry rasp. He ran Elta's state-of-the-art atmospheric compensation logs. Pristine. "Instrumental?" Diagnostics showed every sensor purring like a contented cat. This was new. A shiver traced his spine, reminiscent of the night 6 months ago when Finch had shown him that wooden box, the leather notebook, the beginnings of what would become the Finch Protocol. Devon had never been so sure that box contained more than theoretical speculation. Now, he wasn't so sure it was speculation at all. He retrieved the Zippo, its cool metal a small anchor against the growing storm in his mind. Click-snap. He pulled up the UFT 2.0 predictive model for J0439+1634's light path. The equations, the bedrock of modern physics, were adamant. The spectral ghost simply shouldn't be there. Finch, in a rare moment of whimsy, had once called UFT 2.0 more perfect than the universe it described. But what if, Devon thought, a cold knot tightening in his stomach, the universe was no longer adhering to the script they thought was final? He saved the data segment, triple encrypting it with a password that honored his departed mentor, FINCHSFOLLY. An urgent email, flagged with his highest priority, shot off to Dr. Nancy Hammond, Director of Special Projects at Caltech, and UFT 2.0's most formidable guardian. Her reply, when it came an hour later, was predictably sterile and swift. "Derek, anomalous absorption lines are a dime a dozen. Interstellar hydrogen wisps, uncatalogued dust. Refer to UFT 2.0, Section 7, Subsection B, Paragraph 4. The universe is a stable construct, immutable. Run your diagnostics, and perhaps get some rest. Best NH immutable." Devon's thumb flicked the Zippo's striker wheel, Zzzzt. Click. He stared at Hammond's curt dismissal. He knew what she and the entire physics community believed. UFT 2.0 was the final word, the ultimate map of reality. But what if the map itself was provisional? Finch's voice echoed in his memory from a conversation just weeks before his death. What if, Derek, the universe isn't a book we're merely reading, but a story that's still being actively written? The thought propelled Devon into action. For hours, he became a digital ghost himself, haunting astronomical databases, cross-referencing observations from a dozen different instruments across different epochs of cosmic time. The Zippo clicked, a frantic counterpoint to the silent hum of the servers. He was hunting for another impossible flicker, another note in a song that shouldn't exist. In Finch's private research, the files Devon had spent countless nights studying since receiving that leather notebook and hard drive, his mentor had documented similar anomalies. Not just in cosmic data, but in quantum experiments, in molecular processes, even in biological systems, all dismissed by their respective researchers as equipment error or statistical noise. But the Finch protocol suggested they might be connected, all part of a vast, coordinated change that humanity's instruments were just sensitive enough to detect, but too narrow in scope to comprehend. Devon almost missed it, buried deep in the archived data from the Planck Deep Survey, a mission that had meticulously charted the cosmic microwave background, the universe's afterglow, an anomaly logged 18 months prior, a statistical fly speck from a patch of sky eons and parsecs removed from his quasar. A fractional fleeting temperature variation in the CMB, dismissed as an outlier. His breath hitched. One was a momentary dimming of ancient light, the other a whisper of primordial heat, like comparing the sound of a violin to the taste of chocolate. Meaningless. But Finch had taught him to look for hidden symmetries, for the mathematics that wove disparate phenomena together. The universe loves patterns, Derek, he'd said during one of their late-night laboratory sessions, even when it tries to hide them from us. On a desperate hunch, Devon applied the non-linear logarithmic transform Finch had devised, a complex mathematical lens for finding resonance in apparent chaos. But it was incomplete, missing the crucial modulation key that Finch had been unable to discover before his death. Or was it? Devon remembered the puzzle box Finch had mentioned, the one he'd given to Dr. Hammond years ago. The constellation carvings, the prime number sequence, and most importantly, the raven symbol, Finch's signature. Heart pounding, Devon pulled up the archived files from Finch's hard drive. Buried deep in a folder labeled Personal Correspondence, he found it. A copy of an email Finch had sent to Hammond 3 years ago, describing the puzzle box as a birthday gift with a solution that's elegantly symmetrical, like all good truths. The email included photographs of the box taken from multiple angles. Devon studied them intensely, noting the spiraling sequence of prime numbers carved into its surface. 2, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17, 19, 23, 29, 31, 37, 41, 43, 47. Could it be that simple? That elegant? With trembling fingers, Devon input the prime number sequence into the Finch protocol as a potential value for the missing modulation key. The raven carving on his Zippo seemed to watch approvingly as he executed the program. The resulting analysis scrolled onto his screen, and Derek Devon's heart became a cold hammer in his chest. The two anomalies, the spectral ghost from his quasar and the CMB's thermal hiccup, when viewed through Finch's complete protocol, weren't just similar. They were harmonically related, like overtones of two vastly different instruments, struck by the same unseen hand, playing distinct notes in an unearthly, coherent chord. The stale coffee cup he'd forgotten he was holding slipped, shattering on the polished concrete. Devon didn't flinch. It wasn't error. It wasn't localized. It was a pattern. A deliberate, coordinated whisper across billions of light years and billions of years. But there was more. The protocol revealed a faint upward trend in both the frequency and amplitude of the anomalies. Whatever was causing these pings in the cosmic background was accelerating. Devon leaned back, the Zippo's cool metal pressing into his palm. Finch's words came back to him, no longer sounding like poetic fancy. The universe's source code, finally decrypted. Source code. The analogy had always been just that. A metaphor. But what if it wasn't? What if UFT 2.0, in its breathtaking completeness, hadn't just described the operating system of the universe, but had somehow given humanity root access? Or, more terrifyingly, signaled to whatever cosmic system administrator existed that this corner of the cosmos was ready for an update? The anomalies weren't flaws in the old code. They were beta tests, the first lines of new programming being implemented. Devon's gaze fell upon the framed print of UFT 2.0's core equations hanging above his console, a gift from Finch during his doctoral defense. He'd always seen it as a monument to human intellect, a testament to their ability to unravel the deepest secrets of existence. Now, profound dread seeped through him like ice water through cotton. The elegant symbols, the graceful curves of the integrals, the stark beauty of the constants, they seemed to shift before his eyes, morphing from a map into a key. Or perhaps a trigger. The immutable laws of the universe, were they merely the current stable version of the software? And was something, some inconceivable intelligence or process, now using humanity's own crowning achievement, UFT 2.0 itself, as the interface for a live system modification? The Zippo clicked shut in his hand with sharp finality. Dawn was breaking over the Atacama, painting the desert in shades of gold and amber. But the beauty felt alien now, as if he were seeing it through a filter that might itself be subject to change. He needed to contact Hammond again, not with a polite inquiry about anomalous absorption lines, but with evidence. Real, undeniable proof that the universe was being actively rewritten. But first, he needed to understand more about what the Finch protocol was revealing. Over the next 72 hours, Devon barely left the ELTA control room. He subsisted on vending machine food and the bitter dregs of the coffee machine, mapping the pattern the protocol had revealed. Using Finch's mathematical framework, he began to see the scope of what was happening. The cosmic rewrites weren't random. They appeared to be systematic, methodical, like a programmer carefully updating different modules of a vast system, testing each change before moving to the next. The spectral anomaly in his quasar data represented a modification to how light interacted with certain types of matter. The CMB temperature variation suggested changes to the fundamental constants governing thermal radiation. But what chilled Devon to the bone was the acceleration curve. The modifications were increasing in frequency. Whatever process was rewriting reality's rulebook was picking up pace. On the third day, exhaustion finally overtook determination. Devin dozed fitfully in his chair, his dreams filled with equations that writhed and shifted like living things, and the sound of cosmic gears grinding as they changed configuration. He awoke to the shrill ring of his secure phone. The caller ID showed a number he'd memorized but never expected to see. Dr. Nancy Hammond, calling from Caltech. "Dr. Devin," her voice was sharp, professional, but with an undertone of something else. "Uncertainty? Fear? We need to talk. Immediately." Devin straightened, suddenly fully awake. "Dr. Hammond, I was just about to—" "Not over the phone," she interrupted. "And not over email. I'm arranging for a secure video conference. Can you access the ELTA's quantum encrypted communication array?" "Yes, but why?" "Because," Hammond said, and now the fear in her voice was unmistakable. "The global quantum entanglement network is failing, systematically, in ways that shouldn't be possible according to UFT 2.0. And after reading your initial report more carefully, I think you might know why." An hour later, Devin found himself staring at Dr. Nancy Hammond's image on the LTA's most secure monitor. She was younger than he'd expected, perhaps early 30s, with short, dark hair and intense eyes that suggested a mind constantly running calculations, and these cute dimples that came and then went. Something else caught him off guard. She was beautiful, in a severe, intellectual way that made him momentarily forget the cosmic crisis they were facing. "Dr. Devin," she began without preamble, "I owe you an apology. When you first contacted me about the anomalous spectral line, I dismissed it too quickly. Standard protocol for dealing with what usually turns out to be observer error or equipment malfunction." She paused, her fingers steepled in front of her face. "But GlowQNet, my life's work, has been experiencing cascading decoherence events for the past week. Events that our best theoretical models say are impossible." GlowQNet. Devin knew it well. The pinnacle of UFT 2.0 application. A planetary network offering instantaneous, unhackable communication through quantum entanglement. The system had been operational for only 6 months, heralded as the dawn of a new information age. "What kind of failures?" Devin asked, though he suspected he already knew. "Entanglement pairs that should remain correlated indefinitely are decohering in minutes instead of millennia. But it's not random decay. There's a pattern to it. Almost like the fundamental probabilities predicted by UFT 2.0 are drifting." Hammond hesitated, looking away briefly before meeting his eyes again. "Dr. Devin, I also need to show you something." She reached off screen and returned with a small object that sent a jolt of recognition through Devin. A wooden box carved with constellation patterns. Finch's puzzle box. "You mentioned in your follow-up report that you'd applied some kind of analytical framework called the Finch Protocol. Professor Finch never described it to me in detail, but he once alluded to listening for the universe's own error messages." Her fingers traced the constellations carved into the wood. "This was a gift from him, years ago. I never managed to solve it completely, until last night." Devin felt his pulse quicken. "The prime number sequence. It's the modulation key, isn't it? For the protocol's transformation equations." Hammond's eyes widened slightly. "How did you—" "I found copies of Finch's correspondence in his archived files. I tried the sequence as a long shot. It worked." For the next several hours, They work together across continents, sharing data through the most secure channels available. Devon walked Hammond through the Finch Protocol's mathematical framework, showing her how the prime number sequence from her puzzle box had provided the missing modulation key. In return, she provided him with raw data from the failing GlocalNet nodes, precise timings of the decoherence events, energy fluctuations, quantum state collapse patterns. When Devon ran the combined data sets through the completed protocol, the results were terrifyingly clear. "My God," Hammond breathed, staring at the synchronized patterns on her screen. "They're correlated, perfectly correlated. The cosmic anomalies and the quantum network failures, they're pulsing in sync."
"Not just synchronized," Devon said quietly. "Accelerating. The baseline constants UFT 2.0 relies on aren't just being tested. They're being systematically altered." The screen filled with graphs and equations, all pointing to the same inescapable conclusion. Reality was being debugged, improved, rewritten by some intelligence or process that operated on scales humanity could barely comprehend.
"Dr. Hammond, Nancy," Devon said, using her first name without thinking, "there's something else. One more piece of Finch's legacy I haven't mentioned yet." He hesitated, then plunged ahead. "Finch believed that whatever is causing these changes might respond to being observed, that there might be some kind of feedback mechanism."
Hammond was quiet for a long moment, processing the implications. An observer effect at cosmic scales? That sounds almost mystical.
"Finch's last words to me were about equations changing before his eyes," Devon said. "He said, 'We've noticed. I wonder if that's allowed.' Like he was worried that whatever's making these changes might not want to be detected."
"Derek," Hammond said, the sudden shift to his first name creating an unexpected intimacy across thousands of miles. "There's something else. Something I haven't told you." She seemed to struggle with herself, then held up a small object to the camera. It was a crystalline structure, no larger than a marble, that seemed to bend light around itself in impossible ways.
"This was inside the puzzle box," she said, "along with a note. When the music changes, remember that the conductor may not be our enemy, only the composer of a new symphony." "That's what he wrote."
Devon stared at the crystalline object, his mind racing. "Dr. Hammond, Nancy, I think we need to expand our investigation. The protocol is revealing patterns, but we need more data points, more perspectives."
"Agreed," she said, her eyes not leaving his. "But we also need to be careful. If we're right about what's happening, if reality is genuinely being rewritten, then going public prematurely could cause panic on a global scale."
"Or," Devon countered, click snapping his lighter nervously, "keeping it secret could mean humanity faces whatever's coming completely unprepared." They talked until dawn broke over both Chile and California, planning their next steps. They would continue gathering data, refining the protocol, looking for other researchers who might have noticed similar anomalies. Through it all, Devon found himself watching Hammond's face as she spoke, struck by the intensity of her commitment, the sharp elegance of her mind. He had the strange feeling that this crisis might forge connections far beyond the professional. At one point, Hammond paused mid-sentence, staring at something off-screen. "Derek," she said, her voice hushed, "the crystal is changing." She held it up to the camera. The small crystalline object was pulsing gently, emitting a soft glow that hadn't been there before. As they watched, the light intensified, casting strange geometrical shadows that seemed to exist in more dimensions than should be possible. "It's responding to our conversation," Hammond whispered, "to our awareness of the changes." Finch was right. There is an observer effect. Devon felt a chill run up his spine as the crystal's light pulsed in a pattern that was hauntingly familiar. "That rhythm, it matches the quantum decoherence frequency in your GlocalNet data." Before Hammond could respond, her secure line began to flash with an incoming call. "It's the GlocalNet monitoring station in Denver," she said, a note of dread in her voice. "Something's happening." But as the call ended, Derek Devon remained in the ELTA control room, staring out at the vast desert landscape. Somewhere out there in the cosmos, forces beyond human comprehension were systematically editing the fundamental code of reality itself. And thanks to Professor Finch's posthumous gift, humanity now had a way to watch it happen. The question was, were they witnesses to destruction or observers of a cosmic renovation project? And ultimately, did the distinction matter if they had no say in the outcome? The Zippo clicked one more time in his hand, and Derek Devon settled in to monitor the universe's rewrite, armed with nothing but mathematics and the growing certainty that everything was about to change. 3 days later, Devon's secure line rang again. This time, the caller ID showed a number he didn't recognize, but the encryption signature identified it as coming from the Global Science Council's emergency network. "Dr. Devon?" The voice was crisp, authoritative. "This is Dr. Okoro, chairman of the Global Science Council. I understand you and Dr. Hammond have been investigating certain irregularities in fundamental physics data." Devon's blood ran cold. Word was spreading. "Sir, I..." "Dr. Devon, there's been a development. Multiple developments, actually. The Denver GlocalNet facility is reporting contact with what appears to be a non-human intelligence. And they're not the only ones. We have similar reports from Tokyo, London, and Sydney, all using quantum systems that have been affected by these modifications you and Dr. Hammond have documented." Devon felt his heart hammering against his ribs. "What kind of contact?" "That's just it. It varies by location. In Denver, it's manifesting through arcade games on the monitoring systems. In Tokyo, it appears as mathematical patterns in the quantum field data. In London, it's modifying the functions of a rudimentary AI. But the content is consistent across all sites. Something is reaching out, communicating, and it's using the modified physics as a channel."
"Sir," Devon managed, his throat dry, "what do you need from me?"
"I'm calling an emergency summit, virtual highest security classification. You, Dr. Hammond, and representatives from the affected facilities. We need to understand what we're dealing with before we decide how to respond." As Devon prepared for the most important presentation of his life, he looked once more at the Finch protocol running on his screens, its elegant mathematics tracking the universe's systematic transformation. In the corner of his desk, his secure phone chimed with a message from Hammond. "The crystal's activity is increasing. Whatever's happening, it's accelerating. See you at the summit." "And Derek, I think we're about to meet the programmer." The summit convened 6 hours later. Devon found himself facing a gallery of faces on the LTA's largest monitor, an intimidating collection of government science advisors, corporate stakeholders, and the world's leading physicists. Dr. Lena Hansen of CERN appeared particularly skeptical, her expression radiating barely contained disbelief.
Dr. Okoro, a distinguished Nigerian astrophysicist whose work on galactic formation had earned him global respect, opened the session with grim efficiency. "Ladies and gentlemen, we're here because our most advanced communication networks are failing in ways our best theories say are impossible, and because multiple facilities are reporting contact with what appears to be a non-human intelligence. Dr. Devon and Dr. Hammond believe they have an explanation." Devon began, his voice steady despite the magnitude of the moment. The Zippo remained motionless in his hand, a small victory over his nerves. He laid out their initial findings, the anomalous spectral line from QSO J0439+1634, the CMB temperature variation, the systematic failures of GLOQ-ENET. Then Hammond took over, her technical explanation of the quantum decoherence patterns both precise and chilling. She showed the acceleration curve, the upward trend that suggested fundamental changes were not just underway, but quickening. "This is quite a narrative," Dr. Hansen interjected when Hammond finished, her tone sharp. "But it sounds more like science fiction than science. Are you suggesting some invisible force is actively tampering with universal constants?" "Dr. Hansen," Hammond replied evenly, "the data speaks for itself. The correlation between cosmic anomalies and quantum system failures cannot be coincidental. And now we have what appears to be deliberate communication through the very systems affected by these changes." Luke Mattson, the GLOQ-ENET technician from Denver who had first documented the arcade game manifestations, spoke up. "We're not just seeing random glitches. The entity, or entities, are using iconography and references that humans can understand. They're deliberately tailoring their communication methods to each facility's cultural context. That suggests intelligence, intention." Before Dr. Hansen could respond, Devon's private alert from the live protocol analysis screamed a high priority warning. His blood ran cold. Simultaneously, Hammond gasped, her eyes fixed on her own monitoring station. "What is it?" Dr. Okoro asked, noticing their reactions. "Stand by," Devon said, fingers flying over his keyboard. The Zippo was forgotten as he worked. "The protocol is registering a significant, globally synchronized event." His screen filled with data streams from atomic clock facilities around the world. Every single one showed the same impossible reading, a coordinated deviation. Microseconds only, but identical and simultaneous across the entire network. "Confirmed," Hammond breathed, her face pale on the monitor. "Atomic clock synchronization failure. Global. Instantaneous. This is impossible," Dr. Hansen finished, but her voice had lost its earlier conviction. Atomic clocks were the gold standard of temporal measurement, their precision foundational to countless technologies. A synchronized deviation of this nature defied every known principle of physics. "It's not a malfunction," Devon stated, watching the protocol's analysis unfold. "The harmonic signature matches our previous observations. It's another modification, Dr. Hansen, but stronger, more widespread." At that moment, Luke Mattson's face changed. "The Denver facility is receiving a new transmission. It's different from the previous ones, more structured, more deliberate." Every screen in the virtual summit suddenly displayed the same image, a complex, interconnected network of glowing nodes spanning what appeared to be a map of the galaxy. At the center, pulsing with particular intensity, was a single point labeled in unmistakable English. Earth.
This isn't just communication, Hammond said softly. It's an introduction. Whatever is modifying our physics is showing us where we fit in a larger system. As they watched, the galactic map began to evolve, shifting to display what looked like a three-dimensional timeline. Past events they recognized, the development of the Finch Protocol, the discovery of UFT 2.0, the deployment of GLOW-QENET. But then it continued forward, showing future modifications, escalating in scope and impact, culminating in what appeared to be a complete transformation of terrestrial physics. They're showing us their plan, Devon realized, his voice barely above a whisper. Exactly how and when they intend to continue rewriting our local reality. But why? Dr. Okoro asked the question they were all thinking. What purpose could this serve? The answer appeared on the screens as if in response. The galactic map zooming out further to reveal not just one universe, but multiple reality frameworks intersecting at specific coordinates, one of which was eerily close to Earth's position. My God, muttered Dr. Hansen, her skepticism finally crumbling. They're preparing us for some kind of cosmic convergence, a meeting of parallel realities. The summit erupted in side conversations, theories, panicked speculation. Dr. Okoro called for order, but the damage was done. Humanity's most powerful scientific minds were confronting the possibility that reality itself was being deliberately restructured to accommodate an event beyond their comprehension. We'll reconvene in 12 hours, Dr. Okoro finally announced. By then, I want preliminary response protocols from every department. This is no longer theoretical. We need practical solutions, contingency plans. As the various participants signed off, Hammond sent Devon a private message. Need to clear my head. Peloton session in 30. Username: Quantum Hammer. Devon stared at the message, momentarily confused before a smile tugged at his lips. Even with reality unraveling, some human constants remained. He typed back, Username, Raven Rider. Prepare to lose. 30 minutes later, Devon adjusted his laptop screen on the makeshift desk he'd constructed in front of his seldom-used Peloton bike. The ELTA facility had excellent employee accommodations, including a small but well-equipped gym. He clipped his shoes into the pedals just as Hammond's face appeared on his screen. Didn't figure you for a Peloton fanatic, he said, taking in her Chicago Cubs headband holding back sweat-dampened hair, her determined expression already focused on the upcoming ride. 30 minutes of exercise, 16 hours of sitting hunched over quantum data, she replied, adjusting her own camera. It's basic ergonomics, Devon. Also, she grinned, a transformation that caught him off guard with its sudden playfulness. I'm absurdly competitive. Devon's retort died in his throat as Hammond stood briefly to adjust her bike seat, providing him with a clear view of athletic legs and a physique that suggested she did considerably more than 30 minutes of daily exercise. He quickly looked away, feeling a flush that had nothing to do with the warm-up cues coming from the instructor. 5-mile road race? Hammond challenged. Unless you'd prefer something less demanding. 5 miles is fine, Devon said, not mentioning that he hadn't touched the bike in weeks. But let's use the time productively. I've been thinking about the gravitational anomalies, the aircraft incidents. Always working, Hammond rolled her eyes but nodded. Fine. Science and cycling. Let's synchronize
starting now.
The virtual instructor led them into the workout, Hammond immediately taking a commanding lead as Devon struggled to find a rhythm. Between increasingly labored breaths, they discussed the quantum implications of localized gravitational shifts.
If, Devon gasped after a particularly steep virtual hill, the modifications are manipulating fundamental constants at quantum scales, the effects would propagate upward. Macro-scale consequences of micro-scale changes.
Hammond barely seemed winded, her cadence metronomic and powerful. She was 0.2 of a mile ahead already, her competitive focus evident in the slight furrow of her brow. Devon found himself watching the determined set of her jaw, the economical precision of her movements.
Exactly, she agreed. But propagation should take time. These aircraft displacements were instantaneous. That suggests...
She paused to take a drink of water, giving Devon a moment to appreciate the elegant line of her neck, the intensity in her eyes when she focused on a problem. That suggests localized reality bubbles, not just changing constants, but temporarily folding space-time.
Devon pushed harder, trying unsuccessfully to close the gap. Sweat dripped into his eyes, and he realized Hammond was watching him with a mixture of amusement and something else. Appraisal?
You look like you're about to have a coronary, Devon, she said, not unkindly. When was the last time you actually used that expensive bike?
Theoretical physicists, he panted, live in our minds, Hammond. The body is just transportation for the brain.
She laughed, a surprisingly musical sound.
Your transportation seems to be breaking down. Maybe you should spend more time maintaining it.
Something in her tone made him glance up. She was watching him with a small smile, and there was that cute dimple again that seemed to give him butterflies for a moment. Her eyes briefly traveling over his sweat-soaked t-shirt before returning to his face. The moment lasted only seconds before she was back to business.
So if we're dealing with reality bubbles, she continued, her cadence never faltering, then prediction becomes much more difficult. We'd need a way to detect incipient modifications before they manifest.
Devon nodded, grateful for the return to science, even as he found himself noticing the graceful efficiency of her pedaling, the determined set of her shoulders. He'd spent so many years looking at stars and equations that he'd almost forgotten to look at people.
The crystalline object, he suggested between ragged breaths. It seems to resonate with the modifications. If we could build detector arrays based on similar principles.
We'd need understanding we don't have yet, Hammond finished his thought. But it's worth pursuing. I've been analyzing its structure. It's unlike any crystalline formation I've ever seen. Almost as if...
The peloton chimed, announcing the final mile.
Hammond suddenly increased her pace, the discussion momentarily forgotten as her competitive instincts took over. Devon tried to match her, but knew he was hopelessly outclassed.
Are you even trying, Devon? She taunted, her voice only slightly breathless as she approached the finish, and shifted her position from sitting to standing, allowing Devon to see her lean into the final 1,000 meters. Or is the great astrophysicist content to watch from behind?
Just, he gasped, giving you a head start.
Mm-hmm, she hummed skeptically. Very gentlemanly.
The race ended predictably, with Hammond finishing nearly half a mile ahead. Devon collapsed over his handlebars, while she looked barely winded, taking a small victory sip from her water bottle.
That was... He managed once he could speak again. humiliating, but I enjoyed the view.
That was fun, and I agree the course selected was very enjoyable to the eye, she corrected, her face flushed with exertion and triumph. For a moment, the weight of cosmic revelations and global crisis lifted, and they were just two people enjoying each other's company.
Next time, Devon promised, I'll be ready. You will be able to watch my backside.
Next time, Hammond replied with a smile that suggested multiple meanings, we might be living in a very different reality. She glanced at her watch. I need to check the latest GlocalNet data. Same time tomorrow?
It's a date, Devon said without thinking, then immediately backpedaled.
I mean, not a date, just a...
I know what you meant, Devon, Hammond interrupted, still smiling. See you at the follow-up summit.
She disconnected, leaving Devon staring at the blank screen, unsure if he was more exhausted from the exercise or the conversation. The Zippo found its way into his hand again. Click. Snap. Even as reality itself changed around them, some things remained constant, like his inability to interact with brilliant, attractive women without making things awkward. I wonder if she was offended by my few little personal comments that he now started regretting saying. But there was no time for such thoughts. The crystal at Caltech was pulsing more actively now. The Denver facility was receiving increasingly complex communications, and somewhere in the vast cosmos, an intelligence beyond human comprehension was rewriting the fundamental laws of physics. Devon showered quickly and returned to his workstation, where the Finch protocol continued silently mapping the universe's transformation. The greatest scientific discovery in human history was unfolding. And it wasn't humanity making the discovery. They were being discovered, contacted, perhaps even upgraded. The question was, by whom and to what end? The follow-up summit convened 12 hours later as promised. This time, the gallery of faces on Devon's screen had expanded to include military officials, aviation experts, and representatives from major telecommunications companies. The gravity fluctuations affecting aircraft had leaked to the media, causing stock markets to wobble and social networks to explode with theories ranging from alien invasion to divine intervention. In the midst of the chaos, Devon noticed a strange, familiar pattern forming at the edge of his screen. A mathematical sequence he recognized from Finch's notebooks. And beside it, flickering briefly before vanishing, the unmistakable silhouette of a raven in flight.
Professor Finch knew, he whispered, but only Hammond heard him, her eyes meeting his across the digital divide. Somehow, he knew this was coming.
Not new. Hammond corrected softly. Suspected. Prepared for. Left us the tools to understand it when it arrived. As the summit continued around them, Devon and Hammond found themselves in a silent communion of shared understanding. Whatever was rewriting the universe had been at work for decades, perhaps centuries. Subtle, patient, preparing humanity gradually for the revelation that was now unfolding. The last axiom wasn't just that the universe could be rewritten. It was that the rewriting had always been part of the plan, and humanity was only beginning to understand its role in the cosmic reprogramming that was already well underway. In Denver, Luke Matson watched as Pac-Man formed an unmistakable message on his terminal. Welcome to the network. Integration proceeding as designed. And in Chile, Derek Devon's Zippo lighter clicked shut with quiet finality as he prepared to help humanity navigate the most fundamental transformation in its history. a journey that would eventually lead him to quantum ghosts, cosmic observers, and a harmonic convergence beyond anything Professor Finch could have imagined. The universe had a programmer, after all, and it was reaching out to say hello. End of The Last Axiom by Derek Devon. Narrated by 11 Labs. Mr. Bill, copyright and all rights reserved 2025 by Devon Publishing. Thank you for listening to Book 2 of The Last Axiom series. Hope you enjoy the next book.